It's Monday morning. My name is Keith Brownio. Welcome to Jaws of Justice Radio on 90.1 FM KKFI, Kansas City Community Radio. On today's edition, we focus on children in peril and two organizations that are working to pull them out of trouble and rebuild shattered families. First, host Melvin Merritt speaks with Dr. Madeline Douglas, Director of Residential and Administrative Services at the Niles Home for Children. She will bring us up to date with their programs and opportunities for at-risk youth and an organization she started, Glory Train Community Mobile Ministries. Then we replay a 2010 interview conducted by Elsa Brittenbach with Richard Wexler of the National Coalition for Child Protection Reform about their efforts to reform the foster care system. Find out if the foster care system creates a financial incentive to keep children in custody instead of working to rebuild families. Stay tuned for our calendar of events in the middle of the show and the 420 Drug War news at the end of the show. We also want to thank today's engineer, Beth Pike, for her work on the board. Stay tuned for Melvin and his guests.
Good morning. Welcome to a live edition of Jaws of Justice right here on KKFI 90.1 FM on your dial. I'm your host, Melvin Merritt. In the studio with me is Dr. Madeline Douglas. She has 20 years of experience working as a director at Niles Children's Home, 40 years of experience working as a community leader and activist for youth, over 40 years of experience as a minister, wife, and mother. And right now I would like to welcome her in the studio. Thank you very much for being my guest this morning, Dr. Douglas, and we're glad to have you.
Well, thank you, Brother Merritt, and I'm glad that you invited me. Good morning, Kansas City, and glad to be here to talk about our young people today.
Yeah, that's great. What we're going to get into this morning is we're seeing a lot of youth, you know, having the problems that they're having in our society today, and some of them end up at Niles Children's Home. Tell us a little bit about that, what makes them end up in Niles Children's Home.
Well, there are a variety of reasons that children may end up in places like Niles Home for Children. Some of the major reasons are abuse, neglect, or abandonment issues as it pertains to some of the problems that are going on with parents in our society today. Therefore, the state deems it necessary for the safety of the children to put them in safer environments to make sure that the young people have a chance to make it.
So what are some of the negatives that they leave out of as it relates to their families or wherever that they were at?
Well, I think that families today have, if the parents are on drugs or if the parents are doing things that are negative and it impacts the child's life, the child ends up very angry. Children end up resentful. Children end up emulating or acting out the same thing that has been done to them. Mm. They turn around and you'll see angry children on the streets and wonder why they're so angry, wonder why they are so resentful of doing the things that they're doing. They are emulating things that have been done to them.
That's interesting. One of the other things that I've, you know, out of my own experience of seeing children that when the parents are arguing between the both of them and the children absorb that, and they began to start getting depressed behind that, they're seeing their parents or their mother being abused in that sense. What are your thoughts so far about that?
Well, depression is very real, and I think that when we hear the word depression, we associate it with older people. Mm-hmm. But young people certainly can be depressed.
Sure.
And depression is when you lose your joy, you lose your thrive or your drive to mm-hmm. do something. And when you're looking at a young person, you don't readily relate it to depression, but sometimes they go within themselves too,
right,
trying to figure out
right.
what adults should be helping them
right.
to figure out. Unfortunately, if there is no adult there
mm-hmm.
or capable or
right.
healthy adult there to help them see their way through their crisis,
right. then and nurture them actually out of that.
Absolutely.
Because a child need to be nurtured at that time
mm-hmm.
and to try to understand what's going on that they're seeing around them. What about, you know, just turning the corner a little bit, What about this thing called rejection from the womb? Could you explain it?
Yes, we have a lot of people who end up pregnant because you find a lot of young folks looking for love in all the wrong places.
Mm-hmm.
As a consequence, they get into sexual behaviors that have consequences.
Mm.
And you get pregnant at an early age and don't necessarily want it, don't necessarily know what to do with it, and you are afraid of the consequences of it, so you keep it, but inside your womb, you don't nurture the thing that's being born inside of you. And I think there's a great connection with a woman who is carrying a child to love it, to nurture it, and care for it. When you don't, that child is born isolated, feeling rejected. You don't touch it. You don't give it that skin hunger. We're all born with skin hunger that need to be hugged, loved, and nurtured. And sometimes having children don't even know how to do that.
Right. And a child being in the womb recognizes a lot of things that's going on outside of the womb. And they feel, and my understanding is that they actually hear the things that are going on because, I've seen people where they would literally talk or sing to a child while it's still in the womb. And that child becomes, like a singer.
Absolutely.
Because you can nurture, as you mentioned, that you can nurture that child while it's still in the womb. But if a child that's having a child is unaware of that nurturing process, then that child feels even neglected, as you alluded to it, that child feels neglected in the womb.
Absolutely. And a lot of times, women don't understand, as they're carrying the child, the effects of what they do to their bodies. If they're drinking, children can be born with fetal alcohol syndrome. If you are smoking drugs or doing drugs, children come addicted to the drugs, the system, because you got to realize that baby is hooked to you by an umbilical cord or hooked to you inside of you. And what you put inside of you,
that's right,
you put inside that baby. That not only means natural stuff, that means spiritual stuff too. If you put prayer inside of you, or if you put love inside of you, or if you put caring inside of you, you put that inside that baby.
That's true. And I think about when you mention about smoking, that a lot of young girls that have boyfriends, that they bring that boyfriend around their pregnancy, and they're smoking blunts and things like that, and they don't realize that it's going to cause that baby to come and enter into the world with a lot of anxieties.
That's called a contact high.
Yeah.
Just being in contact with somebody that's doing something and smokes in the room. Sure. You contact it. Now you got this baby inside of you. What is that baby contacting?
Is there any other places besides Niles Children Home, or I should say Niles Home for Children, for a better word? And is there any other places that a young person can go and get educated about, even before they having a child or even contemplating having a child? You know, is there a place that they can get educated with that?
Well, there are a lot of community organization places, state or funded places in the city where young people, if you happen to end up pregnant, you can even go to Truman, to different hospitals and stuff, have programs for our young people that you can sit down and understand what being pregnant is about, understand what prenatal care is about, understand the importance of, even if you don't want this child, you can take care of that. You can do the child a favor by taking care of it in the womb.
Mm-hmm.
And then when it is born, being a blessing to somebody else who wants that child, you gave that child a gift of a family.
You know, what if you got, like, young people, young girls that don't have that initiative? Is there some kind of program that where they take that information within the community to try to educate those young girls, like in apartment buildings where they just plagued with a lot of young girls having babies?
Well, one of the programs that we have at Niles Home for Children, and not just at Niles Home, a lot of places have parenting classes.
Mm-hmm.
They have classes where you can come and you can learn how to take care of your children. You can learn about your anger and your pain. I am one that teaches a class on the healing of two generations. I think in a lot of these classes we teach about how you need to be healed of what happened to you, the family secret.
That's right.
That they said keep inside
right.
and don't tell nobody.
Right.
Well, the secret is out because
yeah.
it got out in that child.
Yeah.
And children are going to react and talk, but there are places where you can go. You can look for wraparound services. They Google everything else.
Yeah.
So to make it very simple, you can
rap
Google.
Rap singers and stuff like that.
Yes, you can Google information about where you can go to get services about housing, get services about to take care of you and that child until you can get on your feet and learn how to be a self-sustaining parent.
But, you know, what I was talking about is some type of initiative type program that would actually go in and set up information, because a lot of those girls don't have that motivation.
Mm-hmm.
Because they're being hindered by their boyfriends and things like that that keeps them away from taking that step of finding out or getting any information that they need mm-hmm. in order to be educated about having that child. And I was just wondering, you know, do they have anything like that where they actually go into the community and bring that information, set up a table or whatever the case may be?
Absolutely. There are action groups throughout the city that set up location and site. They go down to the housing authority. They go to city events. They go even at Niles and different places like Niles. They go and set up action events for the young people to educate them on how to take care of themselves. Unfortunately, like anything else, you got to get up. Nobody's going to, if you want a job, you're going to have to get up, put your clothes on, and get yourself ready to go. People are not going to come to your house to get you. You have got to decide that you want better.
That's true.
If you want better, you can do better. There are places, there are programs, there are, you've got to have some initiative. I want to encourage young people out there, if you find yourself in a situation that you are pregnant, homeless, you don't know what to do in a relationship that you don't know what to do, you're going to have to get yourself up, make your way out. Different churches around the city have programs going on. There are so many places that you can go, but you have to decide that I'm tired. I'm sick and tired of being sick and tired. I don't have to take this. I don't have to live like this. God didn't, I wasn't born to be this.
Mm-hmm.
And so I can do better. So you have to get up. You have to decide, I'm going to find out where these places are, and I'm going to get myself there. And once you get there, the blessing will be waiting on you.
That's good. Remember, if you're just now tuning in, you're listening to Jaws of Justice right here on KKFI 90.1. And my guest is Dr. Madeline Douglas, and she is associated with Niles Children Home. And I'm your host, Melvin Merritt, and we're talking about troubled children in our community. And my next question for as we are turning the corner here, children who birth, actually children having children,
mm-hmm.
and we kind of talked about that a little bit, where young girls are having babies, and how do you deal with that?
Well, you know, there was a season or a time, and I guess you still see it today, where we saw young children pregnant and walking around, and we would say statements like, oh, Lord, there's a child having a child. Well, the children that that those young people had have grown up now.
Mm-hmm.
And because they didn't have the proper nurturing, because that parent was so young, they didn't have anything to give them. And there is a generational cycle of this problem going on, where you see four generations sometime being born 45 years and under. You got four generations. You got a great-grandmother, 45 years old. You might have the grandmother being 30 years old.
Right.
You got the mother 15 years old, and the 15-year-old got a 1-year-old.
Yeah.
You got four generations, 45 years and under is what we call children having children.
That's
Nobody
right.
really had the opportunity to get enough to give you. Because this generation is not as strong as the generation years ago when
years
they said,
ago,
well,
true.
Because that generation had a mother, a father, they had relatives, they had family support, they had they were taught and trained how to take care of. This generation is a weaker generation, and this generation is children having children.
Very much so. And, you know, what jumped in my mind is I was thinking about cell phones and the games and stuff like that. And I have been witnessing young people, their heads are just buried in their phones. They can't even concentrate hardly without watching their phones and playing with their phones. So they can never hardly get any real information about themselves and the direction that they need to go in order to receive that information. And we were also talking about the neglect and abuse and abandonment and anger. And it caused a lack of trust and fear.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of children are walking around in the state of fear and lack of trust. They don't trust anyone.
Mm-hmm.
And then we got this other thing that's compounding that, and that is bullying.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, a lot of that when a child is in a state of fear and other children pick that up and begin to start bullying that child. Well, how would you address that, Doctor?
Well, I will address the parents on that.
Mm-hmm.
I think that parents, because every child is not without a parent.
Right.
I think that parents need to recognize the signs. Sometimes children are afraid to tell adults what's going on with them. Teachers, if you're listening, I would advise adults to kind of look and see if this problem is going to and step in.
Mm-hmm.
Step in. Sometimes the bully needs to see that there's somebody greater than them.
Right.
But if you find a child in a bullying situation, rescue them. Try to help them. Try to support them. We've got a lot of suicide going on as a result of children feeling helpless that the bully is going to get over on them. Adults, step in. You still got the power.
Yeah.
That's why God made adults.
That's true.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, I was listening to the previous broadcast that we had here on Jaws of Justice, and they were talking about children going into an adult system, and the child ended up hanging themselves.
Mm.
And so because they've been thrust into this prison adult atmosphere, and they don't know how to handle it, and so the only recourse they have is to commit suicide.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, I'm just wondering, you know, how can we stop some of this type of thing? Because, it, like you said, we have a weak generation at this point in time, getting the internet and cell phones and things like that, and they can't strengthen themselves spiritually, emotionally, because they don't have anyone as an adult that can lead them in that area, because as you alluded to, the fact that it's children having children. And so when I was in your office, we talked about parents going, doing all the right things, but yet going in the wrong direction.
Absolutely.
What do you think about that, and what do you mean by that?
Well, we have some very good parents who feel like they are doing their children a service by working 3 and 4 jobs to get them what they want.
Right.
And I think that parents need to stop and realize, what do my child really want?
Really need.
Is, or what do they need? And I don't think children need their parents working all day and all night to give them things that don't really meet the need of their emotions. Children need their parents.
Yeah.
And I would say to parents out there, you're killing yourself for one thing, because I think 2 and 3 jobs is for 2 and 3 people.
Right.
I think you need to slow your roll. I think you need to look at that child. I think you need to pay more attention to the need that child needs love. That child needs nurturing. That child needs your arms around them. That child needs to be with you. They just, sometimes it don't cost nothing just to be good to your child. Sometimes it just goes, we've lost the art of just going to the park, you know, just taking a ride with our child, just sitting at home and being with our child. Everybody
those simple
to say,
things.
Simple things in life.
Yeah.
That's
and,
what I mean.
And, you know, I hear a lot of parents, and we're running out of time, and we only have a couple of more minutes left. And a lot of parents feel like, I want to give my child what I didn't get.
Mm-hmm.
And that is going in the, being thinking that they're going in the right direction, but doing the wrong things as they're going in the right direction.
Mm-hmm.
And so, and that's by purchasing things that they didn't have without teaching them, nurturing them in the right direction, like you were saying about taking them for a ride and talk to them and things like that. And pour over into their lives some wisdom and knowledge. And before you answer that, give us your information in case one of our listeners would like to contact you and talk to you a little bit more about that. And have your own program as well.
Yes, I am a community leader here in Kansas City and a great advocate for children and parents. I believe that you can't do anything for the children if you don't do something for the whole family and for the parents. So I have a community group called Glory Train Community Mobile Ministries, where you can just get on this train for a season and learn something about yourself. This is not a church. This is not a personal movement of my own. It is something you can hop aboard for a little while, get what you need, and then we'll drop you off where you need to be dropped off. We'll find out what you need, find out what your family needs, find out what your children need, spiritually, emotionally, financially, whatever it is. And then this train will get you in the right direction.
That's great.
I can be reached at area code 816-726-3434. And for any information that you'd like to know about this community mobile ministry, and we'll be just glad. Again, I work in the House Home for Children. There are so many services there that if you give the House Home for Children a call, we can point you in the right direction there to get you some help for your children various ways, different help for the family in various ways. But I personally am a community advocate here in the city, speaking for myself, speaking for those that have joined in with me as advocates to help our children in the greater Kansas City.
Thank you very much, Dr. Madeline Douglas, for being my guest this morning. And I'm sure that we've given them enough information in the community. And so, and everybody go out and have a great, great day. And this is Melvin Merritt. It's been your host on Jaws of Justice right here on KKFI 90.1.
And now the calendar for the week of January 5th, 2014. The Criminal Justice Task Force will meet Monday, January 5th from 6:45 to 8:45 p.m. at the Church of the Good Shepherd, 4947 Choteau Drive, Kansas City, Missouri. They will be discussing the new challenges for the 2015 Missouri Legislature. Their main goal is to reform Missouri sentencing laws that deal with life without parole and long-term sentencing. They ask that you bring a friend and non-perishable food items for the church backpack program for school children in need. For information, contact Robin Johnson at 816-522-4081 or email redrob2655@yahoo.com. You are invited to join Communities Creating Opportunity. Take action at the Missouri Capitol on January 7th and call on our elected officials to make human dignity and human life the priority in 2015. Together, we can move Medicaid expansion and real criminal justice reform forward to bring relief to our people. Buses will leave from Kansas City Wednesday, January 7th, 2015 at 7 a.m. Please meet at the Metropolitan Missionary Baptist Church, 2310 Linwood, Kansas City, Missouri. To find out how to reserve your spot, call 816-221-990. The Kansas City Chapter of Missourians for Alternatives to the Death Penalty will meet Tuesday, January 6th from 6:30 to 8 p.m. at the All Souls Unitarian Universalist Church, 4501 Walnut, Kansas City, Missouri. They will be discussing their lobby day in Jefferson City, set for January 21st, and the scheduled execution of Marcellus Williams on January 28th. The Greater Kansas City Radio and TV Broadcast Ascertainment gives your group, business, or institution the opportunity to get your message out to the Greater Kansas City community. These quarterly meetings with the media let you tell your story, promote your fundraiser, promote your cause, and hopefully get some coverage in the local media. For more information, contact Kathy Hannis, Ascertainment Coordinator at Entertainment Plus Public Relations, 913-362-6632. My name is Keith Brown-Eal, reminding you that these events and more can be found on the Jaws of Justice Radio Facebook page, as well as the Jaws of Justice page on the KKFI website, KKFI.org.
Hi. Today I'm honored to have Richard Wexler, the Executive Director of the National Coalition for Child Protection and Reform, and the author of Wounded Innocence, a very powerful book about the real victims of the war against child abuse. Welcome, Richard.
Thank you very much.
I would also like to start out by reading just parts of a press release that you gave to Catherine Sebelius back in 08. You said, for young children, young enough, the experience of foster care is like being kidnapped. Other children feel they must have done something terribly wrong, and now they are being punished. The emotional trauma can last a lifetime. One recent study of foster care alumni found that they had twice the rate of post-traumatic stress syndrome than the Gulf War veterans, and only 20% would be able to say they are doing well. How can we throw children in a system which churns out walking wounded 4 times out of 5 and call that erring on the side of a child? If children were taken away from perfectly safe homes only to be beaten, raped, or killed in foster care, how can that be erring on the side of a child? You know, how can that be, Richard?
It can't be. And the reason I refer to that phrase is because that is the phrase so often used to justify what the system does to children. When we hear about these cases in which children have been needlessly removed from everyone loving and familiar, defenders of the system will often claim that, oh, it's only adults that suffer, and we have to err on the side of the child. But the problem with this system is not that it hurts parents, though of course it does. The problem is the enormous harm that it does to children. And of course, there are some children who, in spite of all the harm that foster care does, are so hurt and in such danger in their own homes that they really do need to be taken. But that number is far smaller than the number who really are taken by Child Protective Services agencies.
And Richard, I know that to be true. I've known you for many, many years. I've watched you testify before many committees throughout Missouri and Kansas. And please tell the listening audience what brought you into this war. It's an amazing story within itself.
I was a reporter. My first career was as a journalist, and I covered my first child welfare story now 34 years ago when I was still a journalism student. And I interviewed a college student, young woman who had been in 9 different foster homes by the time she was 9 years old. And she said she had survived the experience by keeping the rage bottled up inside her, as she put it, unlike my 5 brothers who've been in every jail in New York State. And I came out of that interview with a couple of conclusions. First, I was really glad I'd chosen journalism as a career. And second, I knew I would keep coming back to the story. As I did keep coming back to the story, I kept finding that the facts on the ground weren't matching what the most widely quoted experts kept saying. For example, you would often hear in the 70s and 80s, and to some extent still, well, you know, child abuse crosses class lines. Okay, I thought, then how come the only people I see in the system are poor people? And the answer is that poverty itself so often is confused with neglect. So when this dichotomy between what the most widely quoted experts were saying and the reality became too much to bear, that's when I wrote the book, Wounded Innocence, and it was that book that ultimately was my bridge between journalism and advocacy.
And it's an amazing book that I've used over and over again. The Child Savers have a very dark history. I'm sure you can tell us about that. And could you please tell us how the war against child abuse became a war against children?
Well, the roots of the American child welfare system are actually in bigotry rather than benevolence. The child welfare system actually started as a way to control the immigrant poor. It has its roots largely in the work of a man named Charles Loring Brace, who founded a group called the Children's Aid Society in New York City. But in fact, Charles Loring Brace believed that the immigrant poor, largely Catholic, were genetically inferior. And the only hope for their children was to be taken away from the city and their Catholic parents and shipped off to the South and the Midwest on so-called orphan trains, although many of them were not, in fact, orphans. They were simply poor. Things have changed a lot less than we would like to believe. We no longer brand impoverished parents genetically inferior, but we do brand them psychologically inferior. So that if a parent feels discouraged after working two or three jobs and sleeping with the lights on so the rats don't come out at night and bite her children, and maybe she's very tired, she might be diagnosed with, say, apathy futility syndrome, and that's a real term, I'm not making it up, when the real problem is she's poor and needs a better job and she needs to be able to get some rest. So we still are rooted in this same mentality of child saving, and child saver is a term these 19 people in the 19th century proudly gave themselves. We also see this play out in the racial bias in the system. In virtually every community, there is no, in fact, evidence that child abuse is more prevalent among blacks than whites, and yet black children are far more likely to be reported, substantiated, and have their kids taken away and wind up in foster care than white children.
It's horrible statistics that we see documented over and over again. The alumni of foster care clearly shows us that they have double the rate of mental illness. They nearly one-third reported have been abused by their foster parents or other adults in the foster home. Many drop out of school. Few go to college. The results suggest that children placed in foster care have 2 to 3 times higher arrest, conviction, and imprisonment rates than children who remain at home. The laundry list of negativity that happens to these children is horrendous. Could you, people only think foster care is used only when the most severe cases of abuse happen. Could you elaborate on how that's so untrue?
Sure. One of the most striking studies, by the way, is a study that actually compared outcomes in the typical cases, not the extremes, involving more than 15,000 cases. And that study found that in these typical cases, the children left in their own homes typically did better in later life than the children placed in foster care. And that was true even when the children left in their own homes, even when those families got very little help. That shows you that foster care is an extremely toxic intervention that has to be used sparingly and in small doses. But for more than a century, America has prescribed mega doses of foster care. And the way these cases come into the system is, for example, most state neglect laws say that neglect is lack of adequate food, clothing, shelter, or supervision. Well, that's also a perfect definition of poverty. So while a neglect can include deliberately starving a child to death, or deliberately starving a child, period, or locking the child in a closet, neglect also can include a child who is hungry simply because the food stamps ran out at the end of the month, or the child was left home alone only because a single parent desperately needed to keep her job and couldn't get child care.
You know, Richard, the child savers, they have a financial incentive on the children's heads. They have entitlement programs and the Title V-E. Could you elaborate on that, how that works against kids?
There are a couple of different sets of financial incentives. There are financial incentives involving government and those involving private agencies. When it comes to government, there are people who say, state and local governments make money on foster care. They really don't. But the incentives are still pernicious, and here's why. Safe, proven alternatives to foster care cost less in total dollars than foster care. But the federal government will reimburse the state for a large share of foster care costs for every eligible child. The state isn't making money, but it may cost the state less to use foster care than to use these alternatives. Now, the other problem, however, is a lot of foster care is subcontracted to private agencies. And typically, those private agencies are paid for every day they hold the child in foster care. So the private agencies may be told, now remember, your first job is to reunite this child with his birth parents safely, and if you really can't do that, get the child adopted. But if you do that, we'll stop paying you. If, on the other hand, you continue to keep this child in foster care day after day after day, we will keep paying you day after day after day. So so you get what you pay for.
You're absolutely right about that.
For example, Illinois actually changed these financial incentives. They reward their private agencies for permanence. They do reward for adoption, but they also reward for getting children back into their own homes. Now, when they did that, before they had this system, Illinois had more than 50,000 children in foster care on any given day. Today, the number is under 16,000, and independent court-appointed monitors say the children are safer. What changed? The financial incentives. When that changed, lo and behold, the intractable became tractable, the dysfunctional became functional, and the foster care population plummeted.
Your organization has been working 10 long years to make a huge difference in children's lives all around the United States. And you have a list of the top five things that you guys are very proud of. You want to elaborate on that?
Well, there are some of those include things like working to transform child welfare in the state of Maine. This was a state which held children in foster care at one of the highest rates in the nation. And then a little girl named Logan Marr was killed by her foster parent, who also was a caseworker for the state child welfare agency. Now, there are two ways it can go when these tragedies happen. If the local media convince themselves that it's an aberration and that all the solutions involve simply fixing licensing requirements and background checks, then nothing will really change. Working with some outstanding advocates in the state of Maine, notably a foster parent by the name of Mary Callahan, who wrote a very good book, by the way, called Memoirs of a Baby Stealer, which aptly sums up how she felt about what the state was doing, working with Mary Callahan and others, we were able to persuade the local media to look at the high rate of child removal in the state of Maine and to focus on the fact that that problem was driving everything else. So the bad leaders in that state were driven out, better leaders replaced them, and Maine has significantly transformed its system to emphasize family preservation. They were a finalist last year in Maine for Harvard's prestigious Innovations in American Government Award. And I am also pleased to note that while we did not accomplish as much and while there is still a longer way to go, something quite similar happened in Missouri after Dominic James died, again killed by a foster parent. We were able to persuade the Springfield newspaper and then the St. Louis newspaper to begin looking at this issue of wrongful removal, and that has contributed to a significant drop in entries into foster care in Missouri. Again, still a long way to go. Some of the other things that we have been able to do is get the state of Utah to repeal a law which impeded kinship care, that is, placing children who must be placed with grandparents instead of with strangers, and helping to stop a truly harebrained scheme for an orphanage in the state of Minnesota that was once thought to be unstoppable.
You know, Richard, I truly believe one of the greatest things we could do for the children in the United States that's stuck in the foster care system is to open up juvenile court, open up the records, open it up to the press and to the public, because it's just criminal what goes on in those closed courtrooms, and there's really no hope for them with all of this closed courtroom happening.
Well, that is an extremely important change. Missouri has taken some steps in that direction. They have at least partially opened their courts, and that was another response to the death of Dominic James. There are also about 15 other states in which these hearings have been opened since 1980. And what's most significant is none of those states has closed them again. And that's because all the fears you hear expressed and all the scare stories, and you hear that in Kansas all the time when they propose opening the hearings there, proved to be unfounded. The sky did not fall. Children were not hurt. And in the states which have open courts, in many cases there have been some small but significant improvements. The judge who opened the courts in New York State put it best. When she ordered the courts open, she said, "Sunshine is good for children."
I've personally spoke to her because I tried really hard to get that to happen in the state of Kansas. Most people that know me personally know that my children grew up in foster care for 10 years of their life, and their foster brother was murdered by their foster sister. And two of the children were left in the foster home, even though the foster home was closed to foster children. They had adopted some children, and they were allowed to keep those children. One was disabled. We've all outgrown that, and my kids outgrown the system. And it's just really pitiful what happens to families and children and how they really don't have a voice in the courtroom. And even after Legislative Post Audit did extensive audits on how horribly SRS worked on these cases, nothing really seemed to matter much. Nothing ever happened, and I'm really saddened by that. So tonight it's a real honor to be able to talk to you about foster care reform. I encourage people to get out a pen and write down the website to Richard's organization. It's www.nccpr.org. It's important to have this website because this website is filled with more materials than you could ever imagine. If you're a parent out there who have lost your children, if you're a grandparent out there that's lost your grandchildren, if you're a social worker out there that cares about the children that you represent, no matter who you are and listening to this, this website would really give you great insight. The thing about it, one of the neatest things I've heard said about you, Richard, is a lady by the name of Kate Stanley wrote, "Though I'm always looking for opportunities to change my mind, only rarely does someone show up who can rearrange my thinking as radical as you did on the child protection front. It affected my writing in a great many ways, and I'm grateful for that." And she was a former editorial writer for Minneapolis. And I am grateful for that too, Richard, because you actually come out with just facts and not hysteria. And all of your resources are just absolutely incredible. And to think that you only have one full-time paid staff is remarkable.
Well, thank you very much. As you said, you've just interviewed the entire staff of the National Coalition for Child Protection Reform. I do have to add one caution and one caveat, though, and I very much regret this. I definitely hope people will take a look at the website, and they're welcome to use any resources on it. Unfortunately, because of our tiny size, we are not able to assist with individual cases. There is an organization in Kansas. There are actually two in Kansas. One is Sunflower Community Action, and one is Citizens for Change. They are both on the web. They are both based in Wichita, and they might be able to assist.
Citizens for Change, I'm familiar with. I've not heard of the other one. Where are they?
They're both in Wichita. Okay. Sunflower Community Action is actually a broad-based anti-poverty group, but like many such groups, they became involved in this when they kept finding how many of the people who came to them with other problems also had problems with agencies like SRS.
Well, and I would like to give, for the people in Missouri, back many years ago I started the VOCAL group, Victims of Child Abuse Laws is what VOCAL stands for, and VOCAL of Missouri has an incredible website that you can just blog. Just push in VOCAL of Missouri, and there's an incredible website about them, along with the organization that really helped me the most was the National Child Abuse Defense and Resource Center, full of educational pieces and things that can help. It's a nonprofit organization dedicated to educating professionals and for representing the falsely accused, and I just can't say enough good things about them. And I cannot say enough good things about you, although the National Coalition for Child Protection and Reform regrets they cannot help with individual cases. The wealth of information that they share is priceless to all individuals, just absolutely priceless. There's books, there's a newspaper, online stories, magazine articles, reports, websites. Just you've done an amazing job for all children, and I'm in awe of you.
Well, thank you. I really appreciate it.
Well, thank you for talking with us. And I once again, for that website, it's www.nccpr.org. And I just thank you for being with us, Richard, and I hope we've helped somebody out there tonight.
I hope so, too. Thank you.
Thank you, Richard.
This is Jeff Humfeld, producer of Jaws of Justice Radio, and we want to wish our listeners and supporters a Happy New Year. And also thank you for tuning in and spreading the word about Jaws of Justice Radio and, of course, KKFI. If you appreciate what you hear, we want to invite you to get involved and help put Jaws of Justice Radio on the air. If you have an organization or group that is involved with or advocating for children, the mentally ill, homeless folks, those caught in addiction or caught up in the justice system, we would like to hear from you. You can email us at jawsofjusticeradio@yahoo.com. We are also on Facebook and have a page on the KKFI website, which is www.kkfi.org. It is the work that you out there in listener land do that makes what we do here on KKFI possible. We want to thank you and once again invite you to get involved.
It's the 420 Drug War News. The following was recorded on Wednesday, December 17th, in front of the Harris County Criminal Courthouse, Houston, Texas, as part of the 100 Years of Drug War is Enough rally.
I was just going to say that growing up in the 80s, I was kind of the target audience for the D.A.R.E. program. So growing up, you know, we'd have officers come to our classes and line us up against the walls and make us repeat after them, "I will die if I ever smoke weed." They've really tried to indoctrinate us, my generation especially, with a bunch of lies. They tried very hard, and it backfired because when my generation got old enough to know that that was lies, we were very angry about it. Like, hey, I've been lied to. I've been forced to say things that aren't true. I've been forced to adopt an ideology that's not true at all. So I just want to say that their program, you know, as much as they tried to manipulate and use us to continue this ridiculousness, it's just backfiring on them tenfold.
This past summer, July 29th, my son, sitting there behind the camera, and I went to Washington, D.C. We had a conference in the House, Rayburn Building. It was about my book, To End the War on Drugs. We took a brand new edition, the Policymakers Edition. We gave a copy to every U.S. representative, to every U.S. senator, to the president, to his cabinet, to all 9 Supreme Court justices, and we mailed a copy to all 50 U.S. governors, declaring this drug war to be an abysmal failure, challenging them to defend this policy. And thus far, there is nobody who wants to step forward and defend this. I don't know what else to say except, we own the moral high ground. We own the spirit of this. We own every aspect of it. There is no reason for the drug war to exist. It has no nexus with reality. It is a pipe dream. It is a fairy tale from men put forward 100 years ago, designed to frighten us into submission, designed to frighten us into believing that this drug war is a necessary item for our nation. Well, the attorneys didn't come down. The sheriff didn't appear. The police chief's not here. The district attorney is not going to show. Nobody from the city council that I'm aware of is here. The mayor has not shown. Nobody wants to defend this because it cannot be defended.
Someday, soon, I hope, in the not-too-distant future, we'll be able to look back at this time of drug war and those who believed in drug war and see them as the heathens and outright terrorists that they are, ruining communities through this false hope. This drug war must end. Here's hoping that you, dear listeners, will soon help in that mercy killing. Dean Becker, DrugTruth.net.
Ready? One, two, three.
We hope you enjoy today's show and that we leave you with something to think about, something to talk to your neighbors about, and a reason to get involved. As always, the opinions expressed are those of the host and guests of Jaws of Justice Radio, not KKFI, the Mid-Coast Radio Project Incorporated, its staff or volunteers. You can find our calendar of events and a link to our show episodes and podcast on Jaws of Justice Radio Facebook page. If you have a show idea or want to help produce the show, email us at jawsofjusticeradio@yahoo.com. And you can always listen to us live on the KKFI website, kkfi.org. We thank our engineer, Jessica Thomas, host of Before the Dawn on Sunday morning from 4 to 7 a.m. Our outro music is Better Man from the Plan for Change CD. Please tune in for the rest of our 9 a.m. weekday lineup with Law and Disorder on Tuesday, Alternative Radio on Wednesday, Tell Somebody with Tom Clammer on Thursday, and Between the Lines at 9 a.m., followed by Bioneers at 9:30 a.m. on Fridays. Up next is Beauticious Blues with Luscious Lynn, and at noon, Arts Magazine with Michael Hogue. Stick around for Jazz and Blues in the afternoon, and Eco Radio, KC at 6 p.m. Then round out your day with the spicy Latin sounds of Sabor Latino and Fiesta Musical.
Hold my face.
Lord, I'm gonna teach my.